So, Mike, you lead commercial efforts and collaboration across, U.S. therapeutic segments, such as immuno-oncology, cell therapy, women's health, ophthalmology, and so forth. What are perhaps a couple emerging advances or opportunities in those fields that have caught your attention just from an interest perspective, and also then applying to your business, to Astellas' portfolio management as well?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for asking, Mike, and thank you for having me here for the discussion. First and foremost, look, it's a privilege to work across many of these disease areas. And what we say at Astellas in the US organization is it's an opportunity to help so many and millions of patients feel better, see better, and live longer, which is really our vision. So I think the first way I would like to start is really around our strategy and then our operations. Our strategy is what we call a focus area approach. And the reason I wanted to start there to answer your question is, unlike other companies, we don't focus on a disease area, a specific targeted molecule, or even a type of modality in terms of how do we distribute the program. We start with the biology and the science, right? Where we can provide the most amount of help. What is then the right modality? And then what is the specific patient population we can help? And why that's such an advantage when it comes to commercialization across this broad therapeutic area that we service is that we're really clear on what the patient type is once a program is gone through regulatory and approved in the US. So a lot of times you'll see commercial teams focusing on segmentation, positioning, what is the right patient. The next step is really our model, which is how we bring medical affairs, commercial, and market access together. And the approach that we take across all of these areas is really insight driven. And the insights across these markets are very different, as you would imagine. So what we try to do is get the most robust insights available and then focus on executing against them with discipline. And I'll give you three examples across these areas. The first one is really, I can talk a little bit about our GI program, where we launched a program targeting Claudin 18.2. And as you'd imagine, it's an ultra rare disease. We focused on a lot of areas such as physician education, patient awareness, right, access to our customers across our supply chain and distribution. But what we found early was that we really had an issue with educating on nausea. And now you're going to say, Mike, as a commercial leader, is that really what you're going to focus on launch? But that was the insight. We knew if we didn't get that right across market access, medical, and commercial, we wouldn't be able to help the patients that we serve today. And through that insight, through patient insights, we were able to just pause and have an extreme focus on disciplining against educating around how do we manage the maintenance of this program so when patients start on our medicine, they can stay on it and see the full benefit. A second area we really looked at our insights and rigor around that in terms of how do we commercialize it around our retina business. Traditionally, when you're going into an area like geographic atrophy or dry AMD, you're thinking broad, right? There's no treatments for years. Let's go everywhere. Let's go upstream. Let's focus on the retina physicians, referrals, education on patients, direct to consumer. And what we soon realized at launch was that we needed to focus on our retina specialist. And even if we went upstream to the optometrist, if a physician didn't have both the right level of information and education to treat, we're actually causing more of a problem than bottleneck than what we really wanted to do to help the most amount of patients possible. And then the third area was really around our women's health. And I learned this term, which has really helped shape the way I think about how we help women that are impacted by vasomotor symptoms is when you look at women's health, there's three areas you need to focus. And this I learned this externally through an interview, which is the three G's: Google, girlfriends, and gynecologists. And we focus a lot on Google, right? We do a lot of advertising in women's health. We focus a lot on the gynecologist and education, but the true insight for us was that girlfriend piece, the social media, the social listening. So what we did was we paused on the other three channels and really focused on not only getting influencers, right, through areas that we traditionally would have in social media, but really focusing on the conversations women were having and the dialogue that we need to help them start with our gynecologist before treatment. So those are some areas I think that we're learning how insights matter and the discipline we have as an organization.
Yeah, it's interesting. So with women's health, that was a whole new approach then, kind of, right? The digital wise as well, but also in trying to engage with influencers. Can you tell me maybe a little bit more about that?
Well, what we find is that, there's a lot of ways you can do traditional insights through interviews, quantitative on surveys, but there's also a lot of forums where you can gather and listen to the various social platforms in terms of what women and what patients are saying. That can help not only educate us in terms of where we advertise, but specifically the language that matters to trigger the behavior change when they're talking to their gynecologist to seek that level of treatment. It's not using celebrities, it's using real patients. And that's what we're looking and focusing to do. And we've done that across retina as well.
Those sort of approaches, does that kind of feed into your overall emphasis since assuming your current position in early 2024? Does it kind of feed into this internally, I guess, this agile mindset that you're kind of fostering? Can you maybe elaborate on that concept?
Yeah, we've talked a lot about it, and we've been very successful these past few years with this new operating model. So I alluded to our development strategy with the focus area approach. In our operating model, we have what we call our value delivery team, which really brings market access, commercial, and medical affairs together. And what we mean by taking an agile approach to our operating model and the language that we use is that at Astellas, if you joined our organization, you wouldn't see business units, you wouldn't see franchises, you wouldn't see heads of marketing. You see teams, small teams that we call asset teams, that are led by one commercial and medical affairs leader with a cross-functional group of stakeholders, our board of directors, right, for these programs. And their sole responsibility is to drive both the strategy and stay close to the patient. That's all they do. And then what they do is also, instead of having an annual marketing cycle, we actually have a quarterly cycle. So every quarter, these teams get together. They highlight what are the key results needed to be successful. And rather than working them on as a team and then reaching out to different parts of the organization to solve for them, they go to designated value teams. And I'm not going to get into the details of agile as a principle in terms of practices and chapters. The bottom line is we have this value-enabling function across the organization that has these 32 to 35 value teams that in the beginning of every quarter understand for each of our programs, what are the three to four things that are going to make us successful? And that's all they focus on, end to end, from insight to providing a solution to how the team is going to execute. And what that allows the asset team to do is focus on the strategy and staying close to the patient, ensuring the patient is always our North Star. And then the last thing that the agile mindset does is traditionally pharma companies in this annual planning process also budget annually. We do it quarterly. So if you do need to make trade-offs across women's health, retina, and oncology, we're able to make those trade-offs, whether they be investment trade-offs, resources, or what have you. So every quarter, we're sort of able to pivot and learn from our successes as well as our learnings and get better, which is sort of the mindset we're trying to instill through Agile, which is continuous improvement.
Yeah, that kind of caught my eye when I was doing a little research on your approach there. And it's not very common, right? Melding the commercial and medical affairs teams together. I was curious, you've touched on some of your strategies there. Have there been any challenges in ensuring the normal compliance framework and kind of preserving the independence of those groups while also, like you're saying, taking advantage of collaborating?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike. And it's probably the number one question I get when I'm talking to peers and friends outside of the industry. I think others have tried it in different forms. And our secret sauce has really been a focus on the patient and the engagement. And that becomes a focus around how do we bring a unified voice across medical affairs, commercial, and market access. So that's sort of like the vision and why we do it. As you'd imagine, if you're a physician, right? You don't want an organization reaching out to you, whether it's in your oncolytic products or women's health, with various voices potentially sending different messages. So that's why we do it, and that's our objective. The second thing I would add to answer your question is, how do we do it to make sure that we stay compliant? Well, first and foremost, I talked about these asset teams co-led by commercial and medical. Their sole objective is to ensure for each of the programs at Astellas that we have not only a unified voice, but one strategy, right? Because that's strategy, something we can all speak about and align around. And then how we execute against that strategy is different, right? So when I talked about working and focusing on Claudin 18.2 with one of our programs in GI cancer, We had a strategy to focus on improving the education around nausea and how to maintain patients long term to see the maximum benefit. That's a strategy. Now, how medical affairs goes about doing it versus commercial is different. That's where we need to be clear. So any myths, any misperceptions, I think that transparency in the dialogue happened up front. And then there's our ways we can collaborate together. We can collaborate and share insights. Well, what do those look like at the field level, at the MSL level? What do they look at the strategy level? And providing clear examples and roadmaps and a framework that they can use where they can feel that what we're doing is safe and compliant. And then the third thing I would say is even setting up small town halls, so small local area meetings. There's some things that sometimes can get misperceived and just addressing them up front to make sure that we're moving all as one.
So I guess you emphasize transparency in those town halls too, just between departments and people sharing lessons and learnings and all that stuff.
Very much so. And also failures, right? You learn as much from your learnings and things you can do differently. So providing that open forum to share that, I think, is critical, but also best practices, right? How can you share an insight across commercial and medical? What is the appropriate level? And then how do people action from it differently? What is a strategy, right? Where can medical and commercial strategize around a program? So being very specific and providing that framework is critical to make sure that we stay compliant.
Yeah, it makes sense. I shifting gears a bit, but I wanted to sort of get your vantage point on just some of the broader industry, regulatory, and policy climate, how it impacts commercial operations. You're still a member of the board of directors there at Pharma? Is
Correct.
that you're
Yes.
still there? Okay. Obviously, you have that kind of unique vantage point, on U.S. policy and regulatory changes, reforms, everything that's happening as being a member there of the board. What particular issues or actions do you think have resonated most with you as far as the implications for commercial and areas, like market access, pricing, engagement, as you've mentioned as well?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So first of all, it's a privilege and an honor to serve on the Pharma board, and lots of great learnings from peers on ways we can advance our industry forward. So that's a fantastic opportunity. The second thing I would say is, regardless of the administration we have, there's always going to be policy and macro level changes that we need to account for. But where we need to be grounded as an industry is first and foremost around IRA. And we at Astellas are very clear, for example, that the government shouldn't really be involved in price setting. And what I mean by that, it's very public that we had one of our programs go through the IRA and process this past year for IPA27. And I think it's important for people to understand just because the list price is lowered by a certain percentage, that the patient doesn't benefit to that proportion. That's how complex our healthcare system is. And that's why the second objective that we have is really focusing on things like PBM reform, right? We talk about how for every dollar, 50% is lost to the middleman. Right? The patient needs to benefit from the changes in the reform. And then the third area is IP protection, right? We spend a lot, but also invest a lot in the development of these amazing medicines. So IP protection is critical. So what we do at Astellas is stay focused on our patient, and we do that through our end-to-end model. And a lot of times with research and development, you have a clear pass-off or hand-off to the commercial organization once a program comes to market. So we at Astellas are preparing 5, 10 years in advance to make sure that medical affairs, market access, and commercial are involved as early as the development phase before the initiation of a lot of these programs. Now you're going to say, Mike, why are you talking to me about your end-to-end model? Well, it's really the commercial and market access teams that have these insights to policy, what's happening with IRA, what's happening with PBM reform. And they're able to feed that into the development and patient populations that we're serving. So the program can be built in a way to once it comes into market, it's there to serve not only the patient clinically, but the market access landscape that will exist in. So that's how we bring that together. I found great success and great input from our organization. And certainly there's a lot of work that we need to do around policy, but we've partnered great across both the pharma organization and government today. And I'm very optimistic with the progress we'll be able to make. But I don't necessarily think it's changing the way we commercialize.
I guess you do have to sort of look at all the trends and stuff, and you kind of have to think about commercialization a little bit differently, or at all, particularly in access or scaling.
You
Is
do. A
it?
lot of the things that we talk about, like direct or consumer providing our products right through platforms, we do that today. providing the best access and price to programs like Medicaid. We do a lot of that today. So I think a lot of it is education, Mike. So it's a good question. And like I said, there's a lot of work we need to do across the healthcare industry to make sure that we keep the patient first, make sure that if we are reducing costs across the entire healthcare landscape, not just pharmaceuticals, that the patient is directly impacting. And there's a lot of programs that I love the energy that we have today with the administration and helping look at how we can redefine them to ultimately help our patients.
Excellent. I appreciate those insights there. Maybe in closing, I was curious because you do have a vast history in big pharma, experience in different roles, leadership roles at GSK, Novartis, Pfizer, among others. So I was curious to kind of get maybe some of your lessons or learnings from your past roles that popped to mind and how you, in some of your leadership philosophy or style or in maybe building cultural internally with your teams.
Yeah, first of all, it's been a privilege to work for some incredible companies throughout my career. And the thing that stands out is that leadership matters. I've seen that all throughout my careers at various levels across different organizations. And what I mean by leadership, Mike, specifically, is for me, it begins with setting a vision. And I've seen some incredible leaders be able to do that, where you inspire a company to have an ambition that's incredible. And then the second thing from a leadership perspective, for myself, it kind of comes down to two things once you have a vision. One is how do you make decisions? And two, how you communicate them. And what I love that I've been able to take from other companies with our leadership to Astellas, and what we call is this mid-sized pharma life sciences company, is the best of both worlds. And what I mean by that is we very much, like big pharma, have the right level of investment, and when needed, are able to scale. But very much like a small pharma company and even like a biotech, we're able to stay very close to the patient and make very fast decisions. And when you talk about decisions, they're not just done with leadership. They're done with stakeholders that are close to the brands, as I had shared with you a little bit earlier. And they're done with the subject matter experts that are most both equipped to make the decision, but also the ones that can help gear the organization into the best possible place as the program is evolving. And those decisions oftentimes don't come to myself or the leadership team. They're kept at the brand level, at the local level if possible. So that's where we talk a lot about speed. And then we also take the 70-30 approach. We don't believe everything needs to be perfect, right? Progress over perfection. We empower local teams to take the right level of risk so they can make the decision. And if it's successful, we benefit from it. And if not, we learn and share the best practices. So that's where we bring that speed and decision making that the small pharma companies come. And also from a communication point of view, I'm a big believer in authenticity, transparency. And I can tell you in many of our meetings, our CEO, Naoki Okamura, is able to join and we're able to meet him. Our Chief Commercial and Medical Officer, Klaus Zieler, is able to join many of our meetings quarterly and meet with all of our employees. So that's where that small company feel and touch kind of comes into place, where you're hearing from employees what's working. You're hearing the patient voice directly from those that are speaking to customers. And it's really, really a privilege to bring those together. And it's inspiring for me as a leader at this stage of my career to be able to be around that culture. And that's where a lot of our end. You've heard that common phrase of, right, culture beats strategy for lunch. Well, I truly believe that. I think for me, culture is like oxygen, right? You walk into a room, you walk into a company, you breathe it, you feel it. And a lot of that is built around a vision and a common purpose. And that's what I really love about Astellas. So thank you for asking that critical question.
Yeah, sure. So you kind of meld the big your big pharma kind of perspective into this more, like you're saying, like mid-sized. And I guess that's what a lot of these bigger companies are trying to do, right? I do read about that. They're trying to take that sort of approach to culture. There's so many different arms with some of these other companies. So it's interesting that they're trying to take kind of a model from that more nimble, mid-sized or even biotech approach to culture.
I was going to give you a specific example because
Sure.
I found that you can actually quantify culture to some extent, meaning that I feel that when our associates, our employees feel that they have a voice, plus that their voice matters, and that equals to having impact for patients, that builds a strong culture. So that's sort of like a formula. And I think where our model works, and this is what I'd encourage other companies to do, is if you're working in a large pharma company and you're a sales associate, If you have an insight, it goes to your manager, your second line manager, to your brand lead, to your head of marketing, to your business unit head. That's a lot of layers, right? We at Astellas, through our agile mindset, have a D-matrix team. So we have our field associates that work directly with the brands. That's a flat organization. And then they report up to myself. So really, the elimination of layers allows employees to feel like my voice does matter and it does get to where it needs to. And we do take action. And you know what, Mike? If we don't take action, they tell us and we hear about it very, very quickly. So that I just wanted to share with you a little bit of an example of how we bring that to life. What I've also found too, Mike, and I'll say this last thing is I find that obviously having a clear vision matters, making smart choices, but also in present company included myself, people want to believe in terms of what we're doing and our mission. And ultimately, it does come down to believing in your pipeline and development. And I think our leadership team above myself globally has done a really good job talking about our focused area approach, what areas we're investing, you know, and where are we making a difference? And that really is that inspiration does matter as well.